Welcome to the Tax Break Breakdown with your hosts, Greg and Doug. Sit back and relax while they review current and upcoming child care tax credit programs employers can take advantage of. Now, on to the show.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 5. Remotely having this episode from Norwalk, Connecticut. That's where I'm at. Doug, you're still in the...
The Midwest?
The Midwest, yeah. I was gonna say something. But I am in Connecticut. It's snowing out here. It's a beautiful day, normally in San Diego. But we have a really great episode for everybody today. We have a couple news articles that we're going to go through. And this is around the expansion of a child care benefit. We'll briefly touch on an issue that still... Coming to the news. Yeah, the news left and right about flexible work. And then also our main topic is going to be around turnover. And how do you think about turnover and replacement costs? And then how do you tie that to a child care benefit? This is something that I've talking with. I mean, we've talked to hundreds of HR leaders. Like, having a consensus around turnover and turnover replacement costs is, that's not standard across the industry. So then how do you think about it, and then how do you apply that to a child care benefit, which in our experience directly affects turnover? So I also like to kick off by talking about our progress. So our newsletter, 485 subscribers, 76 downloads on our podcast.
Take it. That's good. Somebody's listening.
This is our fifth episode. Somebody is definitely listening. So hey to everybody. We've already started to map out some future episodes, because there's a lot that's going to happen this year.
There's more coming every week, it's going to be an exciting one.
Yeah, so let's jump into the Grug Fact. It's a Grug Fact of the day.
Let's talk about llamas. We figured this one out when we were about to record. Was it the last episode? Two episodes ago?
Yeah, one or two.
I hear you, because you had something in your background. You were doing it, and you had a llama picture, and... this is just our consistent experience with each other, for better or worse, probably mostly worse, but when we had moved into this house, Greg had this beautiful llama picture behind him we were recording. I was like, oh, that's funny. Because when we moved into this house, the one thing that the people before us left was a painting of a llama wearing red glasses. And I just thought it was hilarious. So we kept it and then continued to accumulate llama stuff. So there's...
Yeah.
Got llama coffee mugs. Rain had a little ride on llama. Fisher Price toy, and stuff like that. So we're brothers in llama paraphernalia. I don't know.
It just surprises me every time we learn about these things. Now I think after this one, we're starting to fish for connections. But even though the five ones that we've already...
But that one really isn't that's random. There's some synergy there. But yeah, no, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, but that's okay. Well, I think this may be the last episode with the Grug Fact. Let's jump into in the news. So I'll do the first one, and then Doug, if you want to kick off the second one. But the first one is all around Congress. And this one's related to the child care tax credit that employees can claim on their tax return. And we're bringing this up because these are the little things that I think a lot of employees maybe don't know. And so you, as an HR leader, like, this is something you can share, dig into a little bit deeper. But those families that have kiddos, and I believe during the pandemic, it went up to 3,000, I believe it was during the pandemic, or 3,600.
Yeah.
And then it went down. It was 3,600, the tax credit. And then it went back to 1,600. Now it's trying to go to 2,000. This is not in legislation yet, but I know that they are trying to expand this child care tax credit from where it's at higher and then adjust it for inflation, which I think, again, it's one of these things that exists just like a dependent care account that not many people take advantage of.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, there's a lot we could go into in depth with, you know, the studies that came out post-pandemic and increasing the aid to families and the impact of that. I mean, I think we were talking about earlier, like, cut, you know, childhood poverty rates in half, right? Like,
yes.
It's one of those things that's lived in the tax code and legislation that just hasn't changed as, you know, things have gotten significantly more expensive, especially among, you know, core necessities. So it's great to see the conversation happening. Would love to see that number be a little higher, but you know, progress is progress.
Yeah, this one, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, they say in the first year the expansion would lift as many as 400,000 children out of poverty. 3 million more children would be made less poor as their incomes rise closer to the poverty line. I mean, this is one of those things. I think what was the article was something. There was this saying, like, there's no New Year's resolution that could be powerful as this, or I butchered that. I definitely butchered that. But
sentiments there.
Yeah, the sentiments there. I think keep your eye on it. We will keep our eye on it. It is being introduced. It's bipartisan as well. And I think it says it's announcing a $70 billion bipartisan tax deal to expand the child care tax credit. So keep an eye on this one.
Fingers crossed. All right. Am I going to two?
Let's go.
Yeah. So two, you know, we're seeing a lot, right? And around organizations returning to office, right? You know, hybrid work environments. I was reading something the other week that remote job postings are down 75% year over year. There's a big push trying to get back into office. There's a really funny video that went viral, I think from WebMD's parent company, trying to entice people to come back to the office. And what we found, right, in the article we're talking about is, how inequitable that can be, right? And especially as, you know, we've come out of pandemic times, everybody went remote, you know, people didn't leave their houses for weeks on end, or maybe that was just me. But we got used to it. And, you know, there's plenty of, you know, studies and different things out there to show that productivity is still great, right? You know, it's different by industry, culture of organizations, they get it. But the equity of it, right? Especially when it comes to working parents, women in the workforce, and especially those with small children, you know, having that flexibility in a working environment makes a huge difference. And that pull back, there's a lot of resistance to it at the moment, especially as organizations.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have worked with people at organizations where they've gone through return to office and people have left, right? Like they've gone for other jobs. They've been like, no. You had people that moved during the pandemic and then had to move back to somewhere where there's an office, right? And kind of like a soft layout. And so really, like, understanding that a flexible work environment is an equity issue, right? Like, that's the big thing up front is, like, you have to understand it is, and the impact that it has on families. As a country, as an economy, as organizations, we want to support families. Eventually, right, and we want to take a cynical approach to it, that's where your future workers are going to come from. We need people to be able to have families, have stable families. And we've gotten to a place where kind of the expectation is households are dual income, right? And so, you know, that's the decision, right, that people constantly have to make. It's, you know, part of the reason we got into this space, and especially in talking about the tax credits, is to encourage organizations to do more to support those working families. But there's a, you know, there's still a lot of skepticism, right, around remote work. It's a little intangible. It hasn't existed, especially in some of the industries, you know, that it made its way into during the pandemic, and leaders are struggling with, you know, a bit of that change at times.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
No, I was going to say the in the article, and we can link to it. It's unfortunate. It cites a bunch of studies, things from McKinsey and so forth. But the underlying case for it is that it has social and there's a social and moral imperative for the case for flexible work. And one of the studies that that it states is 90% of women want the ability to work remotely, including fully remote hybrid work options, and with it have experienced an increased sense of belonging, greater psychological safety, and thanks to less unstructured time with colleagues, fewer microaggressions. I mean, the case is there. I think it certainly is a cultural thing coming from the top, and this is just our way of continuing to be an ally and pointing those into the right direction of some of this research. So this is in the Fortune magazine. There's the stat that I claimed was from in one of the McKinsey reports, and I'll certainly link to it. But there's also a quote that was in the article, and I'll read it because it basically defined this whole segment of flexible work. So it says, flexible work practices, when utilized by both men by both women and men, allow more women to ascend to meaningful leadership and more men to engage in meaningful caregiving. This is a triple win. It's great for the business bottom line. It's great for solving gender inequities around pay and advancement. And it answers the mail for a lot of men who want to engage more fully as a partner. I bring all those three together, I think it's a triple win.
It so is. I mean, and speaking from, you know, again, just the dad side of it, you know, if I didn't have the opportunity to work from home, you know, at times, like, it would be hard, especially with, you know, things get busy. Like, it's difficult to be there and be present. And, you know, it's something that's important. It's important to both of us. So always going to advocate for greater flexibility, and good to see that, you know, there's been a lot out there about return to office and, you know, productivity, you know, some things that I would consider a bit more dubious in claims. Like, this is very solid information that really supports the direction that I think naturally we're going to end up in. It's a question of how long we fight it and how many people we hurt along the way trying to fight it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm feeling certainly this last couple of years, switching from an employer market to an employee market. I mean, there's debate left and right. But I did. You know, I fundamentally I've been an entrepreneur, and so I've had some of the luxuries of being able to choose where I'd want to work. But I'm also seeing, when I've talked to frontline work, hourly workers, they also have the similar mentality. They get to choose where they're going to work, and the flexibility stuff also plays into some of those corporate positions. They're starting to, and maybe they've always done this, but starting to ask themselves, starting to put the options in their hands. And I think it's, I like it. I like the groundswell that's happening. So more power to everybody. This is our way of just trying to share some of the insights and research that's out there.
Yep.
Now going into the main topic. You know, our podcast here is all about childcare tax credits, how to take advantage of them. But when we talk to employers and we talk to HR leaders, there's a gap between kind of where they're at today with the problem and how to actually get a childcare benefit put in place. I've talked with several organizations that have said this is the right thing to do, and that's kind of all that they need, because they hear some of the stories that we just mentioned. They get it and they see it. In other organizations, I've had it go the opposite, which is I need to see an exact financial return, what we expect. And in order to do that, you kind of have to work backwards. And so this is our way of helping arm you, if you're looking to make a case for childcare benefits, to your manager, your boss, VP level, C-level, CFO. There's a couple different ways to do this, and there's a couple different steps. And for those also that will be watching on YouTube, I'm going to share my screen on a couple spreadsheets that we've put together. So, Doug, let's talk about the first step, calculating turnover cost.
I mean, every organization, I think, looks at this a little differently, right? But, you know, I think there's, you know, one of the things we always endeavor to do when we look at this, right, is be conservative, but try to be as accurate as we can. And there's different ways to look at it without context, right? Because a lot of times we don't have context. We don't have insight into exactly how an organization does this, right? And so, you know, when we look at it, right, we can look at the average annual salary. We can drive that down to weekly. And then we can look at, you know, the way I like to look at is time to hire, right, is going to factor into it, right? But then also to, time to productivity, right? And time to productivity is something, in my experience of being in the HR, the HCM space for a long time, tends not to get factored in because it's a little bit of a softer cost, but it's a legitimate cost because you have to train, you have to onboard, like just because that person's like showed up on their first day doesn't mean that you actually have that person ramped to capacity, right? And this varies, you know, by position, by industry, but to factor that in, right? So time to hire, how long are you down that resource, right? And then how long, once you find that resource, are they up to speed, right? And proficient, right? Hit that kind of first plateau of proficiency and onboarding. You add those two time frames together, you know, the weekly cost, and you can multiply those, you can get your exit cost. Now, this can vary wildly, right? Like across different positions and you know, seniority, but it's good to have a holistic place to start. And I think this is like the simplest way to look at it through that view.
Yep. So in the, for those that are watching on YouTube, the formula here, average annual salary divided by 50 weeks, that'll get you your weekly average salary. And you multiply that by the number of weeks to find a new hire plus the weeks to 100% productivity, multiply those together to give you an employee exit cost. Another way to do it that I've seen is you simply take 50% of their salary. Now, I've tested this, Doug, with the model and the formula that we have versus what I've been given from clients and prospects and folks in the industry. And it's actually roughly about correct. And so the formula way is an interesting way to do it. I think it gives, somebody a little bit more, it gives somebody a little bit more, what's the word? Help me out here.
A little bit more detail, you have a little bit more flexibility and right. Like you tweak things, you want to have it as a weighted average, right? Like you can run as many lines of this as you need to for different levels of position. So it helps. Now, to your point, right, the broad stroke may get you in the ballpark, and that may be good enough.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it comes to variability. Yeah.
Yeah. Another way I've seen people do it too. So first option, three different ways. First way is formula. There's a formula we put together. The next way is a general 50% of salary. The next is the cohort percent of salary. So it's basically the general, which is 50% of salary, but you're now taking into account that the simple fact that it costs more to replace a senior level employee versus a frontline employee. And so the way that we've seen this be done is take your cohorts of employees, generally entry level, mid level, senior level. In a restaurant industry, it may be front of house, back of house, store management, corporate employee. And then you would take the average salary of each of those positions, and then you would have a sliding scale of the percent of salary to replace. And I'll give some examples. At the high end, to replace, say, a senior C-level, it could be almost 400% of their annual salary. On the entry level, what we've typically seen is between $2,000 and $8,000. So that may be like 25%, 30% of salary. Mid, it may be 100%, 80%, 120%. And so this just allows you to take each of those cohort and break it out. First, I'll break it out, and then you could do an average across them. But this is kind of a another way to look at it, to be a little bit more detailed than, hey, we're just going to take 50% of salary. And so one of these ways is going to get you ultimately get you into a number. Now, a shortcut is if you have this number already, that's great. You can use that. I would maybe also do it these other ways so that you can kind of have a scenario by saying, hey, you know, we factored it three different ways. We took a general approach. We did a formula based. We did a cohort. And then we also used our number. And they're in and around the same. One thing I've learned talking with C-levels is they love scenarios. They love ranges instead of exact numbers. Keep that in mind. Second step, then, is to get your current turnover rate. And then, so your second step, after you now you have a turnover cost, and you want to get your current turnover rate, and then you want to get a turnover rate for organizations that after they implement a child care benefit, what is the decrease? I'll give a couple of examples. You're going to need these basically three numbers in order then to calculate what an ROI would look like. And again, those on YouTube, I'm going to be able to show you this. And so I will switch over to a spreadsheet that I had put together. And there's two components to this. First is just the data and the core calculations. And I used our formula model. If you want this copy of this, I am happy to send it to you. I'm going to walk through kind of how we've thought about it. So this model is essentially, let's just say we have an organization, they have two locations. So what we've done is we've broken out each location and then we did all locations. So in this case, you're going to have each of the formula elements on the left. So the average annual salary at location one was 50. Then there's 52 weeks per year, which gives you an average weekly salary of $961. We're estimating that weeks to find a new hire is 6.4, and then weeks to 100% productivity is 12. So that means that the total weeks to productivity is 18.4. And so the simple formula is basically total weeks to productivity times your average weekly salary. That gives you $17,692. And 31 cents. So that's using the formula. Now, if you just said, hey, it costs 50% to replace this employee, well, 50% times 50% of 50,000 is 25,000. So you can see you're, you know, 18 in and around 18,000 to 25,000. It's not exact, but it's very, very close. And so I did that out of location. You can do that at all locations if you want to get really, really granular. Or you can do a model where it just looks at all locations or all employees. So in this case, in this example, the average salary was $63,000. That puts the average weekly at $1,211. The weeks to hire across the organization was only 9. The weeks of productivity is still 12. So the total weeks to productivity is 21. Employee that costs is $25,000. If you just say the general approach, 50%, that's 31,000. Again, you're relatively in the range of doing it this way. So now that you know,
Right? You do have some variability there, right? There's granularity in it. And it's easy to kind of to tweak that for different positions, right? But it's good to look at them both together.
Yep. And you can even then say, okay, well, let's take the average of both locations. If you don't have all locations, the average of both locations was actually about 23,000 exit cost. So again, you're in and around the range. But again, keep in mind, good advice that I've gotten is when we talk with executives, they love thinking in scenarios and they love thinking in ranges. So now that we have a couple, we have our exit costs, I'm now switching over to the ROI calculation. And so what the way that I broke this out was, in many cases, employers, especially now, they've never done a child care benefit. They aren't sure the value of it. And so they're a little bit skeptical about, you know, putting their whole foot in the water. That's the saying I hear. They want to take a little bit less risky approach, and they want to do some level of proof of concept, the proof of value. So I put together a scenario here where, let's say you work in an organization that's a little bit, they want to see some results before fully investing. That's typically the trend that I've seen is, yes, we'll certainly invest in this. I just want to see. And so there's a couple components that you're going to want that I broke out here. So kind of above row 13 here, that's the pilot analysis, proof of concept. And then I put, well, hey, maybe we're going to expand this by 10 times. So in this case, this is an organization that has 25,000 employees. Let's say that the pilot proof of concept is 2,500. So here's how you think about it. There's two different sections here. Without a child care benefit, and then with a child care benefit. So you're going to want to map both sides of it. The reason why you're going to do this is because the idea behind this is you're going to have a turnover rate. And in this case, we have it at 39%. Without child care benefits, you have a current turnover rate. The flip side of that is you can expect when you launch a child care benefit that that turnover rate is going to go down. And this is something that Doug and I have seen. It kind of ranges based off the industry, but I'm actually giving an example of a client that we work with that saw their turnover drop from 39% to about 9%. So you're going to want to know what is your current turnover percent now? And then if you're evaluating the child care benefit, what are they claiming that they're going to be able to reduce their turnover by? I think in this case, it was like 7X. So here's how to do the math. You have 2,500 employees. Without child care benefits, let's say 10% of them opt in. That means you're going to have 250 employees opt in. They normally would turn over at a 39%. That means the number of employees expected to turn over is 39% is, sorry, 39% this, okay, is 98. Yeah.
We're dealing just with the cohort, like the people in need, right? And so when we look at organizations, right, like the ballpark is around a third of, you know, employees have children under the age of 12, right? And it varies by industry. Like we're going to see it higher in healthcare. We're going to see it lower in manufacturing in some places, though not always. But it'd be a little bit different. So that's the cohort we're measuring this on.
Yep. And so... And I'm just making some quick little changes here because I want to also show you here that when you're in this template, you can make changes. So we have 2,500 employees. We think 10% are going to opt in. Again, this is low. When you actually add a subsidy, it goes significantly higher. Let's say 39%, that is the company's turnover rate as of today. So therefore, out of the 250, 98 are going to turn over. Again, based off of our formula, it costs $25,442 to replace them. That means that these employees cost the organization about $2.5 million. So now you have to contrast that with, okay, if we have a child care benefit, what was the impact on turnover? Again, this is a real life organization where they was able to see their turnover drop from those that opted in from 39% to 9%. So now you do the same math where you say, okay, well, those that have the child care benefit, the same amount of people are going to opt in, 250, but those that opt in and utilize the child care benefit are actually turning over at a lesser rate. Then you put 9%, which means only 23 employees would turn over. Now the cost to replace is the same. Now, and this is saying is that we're not saying that that child care benefits wipes out turnover completely. It's saying that those that do opt into child care benefit are turning over at a lesser rate. And for all the variety of reasons, you're actually helping support their foundation. And yeah, so there still is.
Across industries and organizations, right? Typically between the range of 4 to 8X, that population, when we put a program in place, they stay. right? Supporting the family is such an important part of this. And on the business side, it drives the ROI. So there's a lot of data out there to showcase that this is it. And we've seen it ourselves in continually running these studies.
Yep. So without a childcare benefit, the turnover and replacement costs about $2.5 million. With a childcare benefit, the turnover and replacement costs is about $572,000. So the net savings is about $1.9 million. Now, in order to really figure out the ROI, and there's a couple different ways to factor ROI, whether it's a percent, so return on investment percent. Another way I love doing it is a return on every dollar invested. And so on the right side here, we just make some assumptions. Let's assume that the program costs $100,000. And so one other thing we've already talked about is that for a lot of employers in the US, they get a tax credit. So for a program like this, you can get between 10 and 25% back. It's form 8882. And so the after-tax credit program cost is $90,000. So you take your program costs for the pilot minus by the estimated tax credit, that's going to give you $90,000. So this is going to then give you a net turnover cost savings. So this is your savings from turnover by measuring against those with the child care benefit and those without, and then adding or subtracting the cost that it costs to run the program. And then it's a division. It's a division problem here. And so what we're actually seeing is that if the program costs $100,000, and again, this is anything in the spreadsheet in yellow is actually editable. So if you want this, feel free to ping us. And so then this is saying that at this price and at these returns, the return on investment's about 1,920%, which is also meaning for every dollar invested, you're going to see a $20 return. And now if you actually look at columns L and M, again, executives love looking at scenarios and then also looking at ranges. And so what we put here was then we'll take 75% of that. Let's say that there's a margin of error of 25% or even 50%. You're still at a significant return on investment. So even if you said, you know what, I just don't believe these, like, let's cut it in half. Even cutting it in half, you have a 960% return on investment, or $10 for every $1 invested. This is one way to get to some pretty detailed numbers on expectation. Go ahead, Doug.
To do this, right, is, you know, we came to the practice, right, of reducing this, right, because, you know, we get... not challenge, but you're always going to have a conversation. We present ROI. It's going to be, okay, what's not in here, right? And ultimately, right, we want to make sure there's buffer. We know that there's things that can be, you know, correlated, maybe not caused by the program, but we're focusing just on turnover cost of a program. But the thing that I think is important to call out, right, again, we can reduce this down, but it is more likely that we are understating the impact than overstating the impact. And the reason why is this is not going to take into account, right, the impact on, or at least all of the impact on absenteeism, right, and helping with childcare and what that can do for the same cohort. Presenteeism, right, like the social aspects of it, you know, employee satisfaction, internal, external branding of giving support within the community, reducing time to hire, all of these things, like we've seen be impacts of these programs, and they don't get factored in. So this is looking at just through one lens and the impact that it has. So it's incredibly compelling in my mind, even when you start to reduce that, because there's probably more things you could add in that are just not easy enough to get to.
And so for this analysis, again, I took this as this first section up here is a organization, 2,500 employees. What would that look like? But if the organization was much larger and you wanted to break it out into two sections, you would do 2,500 employees. This is for your pilot. The goal of the pilot is really to get the data to prove that turnover can drop once you add a program like this. And you have some kind of hypothesis here on the numbers. Now, this other scenario you'd want to show and have an anchor to is Well, now if those numbers hold true, what does it look like across the organization? So going from 2,500 employees, 25,000 employees, if you hold that the opt-in is still 10% and the turnover is still going to be the same, then you just run the math. The program, obviously, I just put here as a, it would cost 10 times the amount. But again, not sure what it would end up being. You would deduct a tax credit to give you an after-tax credit program cost. Therefore, then you're going to get your net turnover cost savings. And in this model, it's basically saying the net turnover cost is about $18 million for a $1 million investment. Disclaimer here, I don't know what the cost would actually be for a program like this. It is something we can figure out, right, Doug?
Yeah, we certainly can. But it just goes to show that the scale is there, right? And again, I think the big things to take away is, again, consistently, right? Independent of us, but also in our own experience, we've seen this make an incredible impact on turnover among this cohort of working parents in our organization. But also help with a lot of things outside of that, right? When we talk about, you know, even absenteeism, right? Time to hire. But I think the easiest one to understand. Organizations are typically comfortable with the concept of turnover cost and uncomfortable with the number that's associated with turnover cost.
Yes.
So I think it's a great thing to attach to. And kind of bring it. And right, you know, a lot of independent data out there as well showing the impact and how meaningful this is for working parents, especially in frontline populations.
Yep. And so when looking at this 25,000 employee group, again, if those turnover numbers are accurate, what this is basically saying is that at an employee exit cost of 25,000, mm-hmm. and at a turnover of 39,000 or 39%, I mean, it's costing the organization $24 million. So if you can save any, what's that?
That's the uncomfortable number. Yes.
That's the uncomfortable. Yep. And then, you know, if you can reduce it by any way, shape or form, you're going to be saving the organization money, which we already know providing childcare benefits will do that. We've proven it. And so in this example, $19 million saving, I mentioned I did a program ROI analysis and I just said $1 million. I just actually increased it and said, well, let's just do $5 million. It's still a significant return on investment, 800% or $9 for every $1. And then again, chop that in half, 400% return on investment, $4.50 for every $1. One thing kind of to wrap this up too is it's important to know, and this is something that, you know, it is a challenge to get to, but at what level of return on investment is actually going to interest your executives? Now, again, there's the emotional tie to this, which is this is the right thing to do. It's a social and moral imperative. It's something that's foundational to all of our employees that have kiddos. Mm-hmm. But if you need to do it on a numbers basis, this is a spreadsheet that we put together that's going to help you at least start building that. And a lot of it is editable too. So you can just go in anywhere that there's yellow, just fill in some numbers and you're going to start seeing the impact that this could have. So I will make sure to link this in the LinkedIn article and make it visible to everybody. If you want us to walk you through this as an example for your organization, Doug's calendar is wide open.
And open all the time in the world, man.
And we really appreciate you listening. So let's cue the music and goodbye from Connecticut.
Yeah, Kansas City.